Good morning. Good to see y'all. Nice to be together. Just bringing our practice here. I'm going to say some things, but I think probably what's most important is the way we pay attention. It seems to be the way it is for me. So I'm going to talk today about a very old poem called The Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi. But I hope that all the teaching that we do here and all the practice that we do here is about finding this deep, long-standing tradition of wisdom and practice and teachings and make it alive today. Make its healing power alive today. So I will also talk about some of the things that I know for many of my friends are weighing on our hearts. In particular, a lot of things that have been related to the shooting of Philando Castile. But I'm going to start by jumping into practice, ancient text. And so, first, I'm going to talk a little bit about chanting, a practice that I really love, a practice that I've done every day for many years, a practice that I first encountered here at Minnesota Zen Meditation Center about 16 years ago, and when I heard it start, I got up and left. I thought, that is really weird. So we'll see how many people leave today. You know, I've been chanting the Heart Sutra here with the group of people a couple mornings a week for many years. We don't do a lot of chanting here at MZMC, but it's a beautiful practice. It's a way of taking teachings actually into your body. It's a way of concentrating the mind, paying attention to what's here. And when you're chanting, it's best to really focus on hearing and allowing sound to emerge from your body that is in accord with the sound you're hearing, the voices of those around you. This is just like all our practice. Deep presence and attention to the sense fields and action that arises out of that rather than action that arises from a need to act. And then maybe, I'll look over here and see what's happening. And if we chant this here, Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi, my guess is somewhere around 87% of it will be nigh upon incomprehensible. I don't know if you ever tried reading the Bible. It's like, what is this stuff? It's very mysterious. You read old texts from the Buddhist tradition. They're hard to understand. Not understanding things is actually just fine. Actually getting a taste of not knowing is very helpful. Becoming accustomed to being in the position of not knowing. Normally we think we know, we're always wrong. So if we get used to saying, oh, yes, I actually don't know, it's all right, I can be with this, it's good. So I really invite you, as we're chanting this, just not to get stuck on the parts that you're like, what? What is that? The hexagram double fire? What is that? I barely know, so it's all right. Let the words and the sound flow over you. And, you could say, well, why do that? Why don't you just pick something easy? But I'll just make this comparison. I don't know how many people, we don't need to have a show of hands, but many people enjoy Shakespeare, right? Enjoy Shakespeare. You go see Shakespeare plays. You find them deeply moving. You see the humanity, the art that Shakespeare created. It travels across time. It shows you things that are profound and complete about what it is to be human. But the first time people encounter the text of Shakespeare, They have no idea what's happening. Maybe you can't remember. It's like, what even is this? What is this? And then, you know, so you take your kids to see Midsummer Night's Dream because they put like a ass's head on somebody. That's funny. So we find some easy entrance points. But if you want to be able to access the profundity of what he achieved, you have to keep coming back to the language, even though it's hard to understand. And even people who are really into Shakespeare, you go to these plays and there's parts where you're like, I don't know what they're saying, but I feel it. So, this is true two of the Dharma. I'm going to give you a couple of hints before we chant this, just to help it. It might be fun if it made some sense. So this whole text is about thusness. The opening line is, the Dharma of thusness is intimately transmitted by Buddhism ancestors. The teaching of thusness. So thusness, sometimes the word that's translated is translated as suchness, suchness, thusness, as it isness, things as it is. So this whole poem is about as it isness, thusness. And every time the poem says it, it's talking about things as it is. So, with that in mind, let's go. I invite you to chant. If you don't want to chant, that's okay. And if you want to go outside, that's all right too. I know the feeling. I did it in my day. But sometimes it's good to just stay put and see what happens. Stay put and see what happens. So I'll chant the title. This is the traditional way the person leading the chant chants the title to give everyone the pitch, and you can just come on in as you feel comfortable. Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi. The Dharma of thusness is intimately transmitted by Buddhas and ancestors. Now you have it, preserve it well. A silver bowl filled with snow, a heron hidden in the moon, taken as similar, they are not the same, not distinguished, their places are known. The meaning does not reside in the words, but a pitiful moment brings it forth. Move and you are trapped, miss and you fall into doubt and vacillation. Turning away and touching are both wrong, for it is like a massive fire. Just to portray it in a literary form is to stain it with defilement. In darkest night it is perfectly clear. In the light of dawn it is hidden. It is a standard for all things. Its use removes all suffering. Although it is not constructed, it is not beyond words. Like facing a precious mirror, form and reflection behold each other. You are not it, but in truth it is you. Like a newborn child, it is fully endowed with five aspects. No going, no coming, no arising, no abiding. Popoahanhan, is anything said or not? In the end it says nothing, for the words are not yet right. In the hexagram, double fire, when main and subsidiary lines are transposed, piled up, they become three, the permutations make five, like the taste of the five-flavored herb, like the five-pronged vajra, wondrously embraced within the complete drumming and singing begin together, penetrate the source and travel the pathways, embrace the territory and treasure the roads. You would do well to respect this. Do not neglect it. Natural and wondrous, it is not a matter of delusion or enlightenment. Within causes and conditions, time and season, it is serene and illuminating. So minute it enters where there is no gap. So vast it transcends dimension. A hair's breadth deviation, and you are out of tune. Now there are sudden and gradual in which teachings and approachings arise. With teachings and approaches distinguished, each has its standard.
Whether teachings and approaches are mastered or not, reality constantly flows, outside still and inside trembling, like tethered colts or cowering rats. The ancient sages grieved for them and offered them the Dharma. Led by their inverted views, they take black for white. When inverted thinking stops, the affirming mind naturally accords. If you want to follow in the ancient tracks, please observe the sages of the past. One on the verge of realizing the Buddha way contemplated a tree for 10 kalpas, like a battle-scarred tiger, like a horse with shanks gone gray. Because some are vulgar, jeweled tables and ornate robes. Because some are wide, white-eyed cats and white oxen. With his archer's skill, he hit the mark at 100 paces. But when arrow point head-on, how could it be a matter of skill? The wooden man starts to sing. The stone woman gets up dancing. It is not reached by feelings or consciousness. How could it involve deliberation? Ministers serve their lords. Children obey their parents. Not obeying is not filial. Failure to serve is no help. With practice hidden, function secretly like a fool, like an idiot. Just to continue in this way is called the host within the host.
All right, well, yeah. Some of you know I wrote a book about the song of the Grassroots Hermitage, and now you might know why. This is a lot simpler. This is much, much more complexly elusive text than even many other old classical Chinese Zen texts. This is from the 9th century. It's attributed to Dongshan, the 11th in the male side of our lineage, the 11th Chinese ancestor. So, when you do that, lots of things come up. You think, oh, what the heck is that? That's weird. Or maybe you think, oh, natural and wondrous, serene and illuminating. What's that? Do I know what that is? So some of the words may touch us, some may mean nothing, some may, oh, I don't know about that. That's okay. Your own relationship to what's happening is very important. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the thusness part here. I'm probably not going to get too far past the first line of this thing, so it's all right. We'll have 50 more talks and we'll get through it. Be cool. So thusness, suchness, as it isness. Thusness started to become a common and popular term. The Sanskrit is tathata. In the middle of the first millennium, in large part because of it's called the Yogacara school of Buddhism, which is profoundly influential on Zen. So, what's thusness about? Thusness, as a point of emphasis, what Dongshan says is what's intimately transmitted by Buddhism ancestors is thusness, just this. Not something outside of what's happening right now. Like, not right now when he wrote the poem, but like right now. You're right now. So, someone asked Furong Daokai, what is the style of the master's house? And he said, everyone can see it. Everyone can see it. I'm not sitting here with an esoteric teaching. The funny thing is then the poem is so esoteric. It's very Zen. Very Zen. He says, it's just what this is. Then he talks about it. Complex allusions to Taoism, Indian, Chinese Buddhism. So, but it is just your life right now is what this tradition is about. Immediacy. Immediacy. Not the past, which isn't here, nor the present. But what's this? So, thusness, to say thusness has qualities is problematic, because as Dongshan says in here, just to portray it in literary form is sustainable defilement, which is great, because he's just like said all these beautiful metaphors and similes about it, and then he's like, oh, by the way, I'm just messing it up. So, it's something ineffable. I can't, put your thusness into words, nor can you. I mean, there's so much happening in this moment of experience. If you wanted to try and describe it in detail, it would take a lifetime and you would fail. It's astonishing. Every grain of in the wood is within your field of experience. It's immediate. So this thusness has to do with immediacy. But it also has to do with the fact that this moment of experience actually includes everything in all directions. And for those of you who are here at the talk I gave about Uji, Dogen's Uji, he presents two principal views of time, immediate and infinite. So there's just this moment, but this moment always includes everything that has ever happened and everything that will ever happen. They're all intimately related because cause and effect is infinitely connected through every possible way. So we may feel like we're separate from things, but in some level, the first explosions that formed the stars and the first people who decided to cultivate corn on what we now call North America, first people to stand up and say, you know what, I don't think we should have slavery. All of those people are contained in this moment of experience, in this thusness. So he says, so minute it enters where there is no gap, and so vast it transcends dimension. There's no gap between you and this moment. It's just boom. It may feel like it is, but you can't actually find it. Any space in there. It's just, there's experience. But this experience is vastly connected to everything. And, in Zazen, we move closer to the moment. We cultivate an ability to be within immediacy, to be close, to start to not imagine a gap between ourselves and the moment and between infiniteness. We imagine there's some kind of gap. And if we do that, sometimes we can feel the infinity of this moment. People always do a lot of practice. Timelessness. Because this moment is infinite. So, there's no violence within thusness. Thusness doesn't harm things. This moment doesn't go out and grab the next moment, and it doesn't go back to the next moment and mess it up. It just is. It just is. So, to move close to how the moment is, to find intimacy with thusness, we practice nonviolence in this tradition, the nonviolence of just sitting still and just opening up to how it is. Opening up to how it is. Opening up. Yet again, this moment. Oh, I want to close down. I don't like this moment. When's the bell going to ring? Ooh, I'm having such a great meditation. I hope the bell never rings. Whatever it is. So, opening up. Just moment to moment. Having a nonviolent relationship with our moment of experience. And thusness is beyond conception. To portray it in literary form is sustainable with defilement. So all our ideas about it are limited. That's how ideas are. They're little guys. Ooh, I'll take whatever is here, or I imagine to be here, and I'll make it small enough that I can manipulate it. That's how human consciousness generally functions. And it's pretty handy, if you want to make dinner. It's good to be able to tell the difference between peas and gravel. You remember that, Ian? Sorry, Tenzo. but to be able to be aware that all of our ideas are essentially limiting. They're all tools for a kind of a subtle violence that we do to the world of trying to figure it out constantly and manipulate it. To be aware that that is true and to be able to make some space, some pause in that process of objectifying and controlling is very powerful, and it's the essential activity of Zazen. Just presence. And to move close to intimacy with thusness, we have to bring things into awareness that we're not aware of. Jung says something like, Carl Jung, until the unconscious becomes conscious, we will call it fate. And we will repeat it. That's just basic Buddhism. So, the early teachings of Buddhism, mindfulness is a way of bringing unconscious elements of experience into consciousness so that we do not call them fate and we realize we have the capacity for individual liberation from suffering. So, to open up to thusness is we want to bring things into awareness we're not aware of. Oh, I have feelings. We go to long retreats and sometimes it's like, oh, I thought I was just going to get all peaceful, and I actually, one of my sittings was just, I cried the whole time. Oh. Or I was super mad. I got incredibly mad because someone, like, knocked a cup over an hour and a half ago. Everyone who's been to a retreat knows what I'm talking about. Because our consciousness, it's like, I have to have this anger. I'm conditioned to feel this anger. What can I do? And we take away all the conditions that could reasonably produce it so we can see that our consciousness produces it on its own. Bringing into awareness that all this violence that we do to the world comes from our habituation. So we practice awareness of the body because so much of our emotional and cognitive life comes out of the habits of our body. You see people like this and they're down. They're thinking the world doesn't work. And they sit up and they say, thinking, I got it going on. And so we find a middle ground. The body, the emotions, we become aware of thoughts. You sit in meditation, you're like, wow, look at all these thoughts. That's good to know that they're happening, because they're happening anyway. So, these are some means of moving closer to the way things are. I mean, and the funny thing is you can't move closer to it because it's already how they are. Fundamental Zen paradoxes. You're already within thusness. It's already complete. And yet, those of us who practice know that you can move closer to this kind of immediate, non-violent, non-conceptualizing sense of the ultimate connectedness of all things. It's liberative. And it's, well, Dongchen says, now you have it. Now you have it. This is the second line. It's like, oh, I thought I was going to wait and get some magical Dharma transmission from a Zen master in 20 years by practicing forever. No! You have it! It's a standard for all things. Its use removes all suffering. Wondrously embraced within the complete, drumming and singing begin together. Penetrate the source, travel the pathways, embrace the territory, treasure the roads. It's natural and wondrous, serene and illuminating. Whether teachings and approaches arise, reality constantly flows. This is a series of quotations from this text that are to remind us that it's already here and it's wondrous. It's wondrous. If you move close to being with thusness, you'll feel its wonder. You'll walk out of the door to this place after morning zazen and you'll be like, wow, I am alive. I may not be alive tomorrow, but I can do something today. Wow. It's very encouraging, but You know, these Buddhist people, they never let us off the hook. They take us off the hook completely, and accidentally we find that we're completely on the hook. Because everything's connected. Because everything's connected. So, yeah, in that second line, the first line, Dongshan says, the Dharma of thusness is intimately transmitted by Buddhas and ancestors. Now you have it. Oh, goody. Preserve it well. Oh, no. Oh, no. Why do I have to do that? How can you do that? How can you preserve the way things are? It's, as Vasubandhu says, it's always already thus. It's always already thus. I'm like, I'm going to go grab the moment. It can't be done. It's momenting. So, and yet, now you have it. Preserve it well. Preserve it well. We have some call here in this tradition to do something. To do something. Ministers serve their lords. Children obey their parents. So, this gets kind of complex, but there's this huge body of teaching in Zen that are they call the host and the guest. Or you could say the parent and the child, or the minister and the lord. The host in Chinese is always going to be the king. He's going to serve you. It's backwards, I know, but that's how I do it. So, the host is like everythingness, the infiniteness. And we normally feel like we're separate from that infiniteness, although I don't think it's probably actually true. But we are like a little guest. We feel like a little guest in the world. Oh, I have to make my way through the world and get things done. But we can see how big and complete the world is through this practice. And so the host and the guest remind us that even if we suddenly we do enough practice and we feel completely absorbed in the infinite, we realize, oh, wait, I actually have to have this ego to go out and do something. Do something. Failure to serve is no help. To quote Dongshan, the third to last line of this poem, failure to serve is no help. And the problem is then we go, oh, I've got the thusness, and I've got an order to serve, so I'm going to go out and kick some Buddhist butt. I got it all figured out. And then he says, practice secretly like a fool, like an idiot. Just remember, we don't know. I definitely do not know. And yet, my practice is to move close to thusness and to act from that relationship. That's my training. That's my training. So, I was at Columbia Heights Police Department on Thursday morning. I've been providing mindfulness training to the Columbia Heights Police Force for about 6 months or something, which has been a really wonderful opportunity that just fell in my lap, and I'm very grateful for the people who made it happen, which is other people much more than me, particularly John Lee at the United Theological Seminary. He's a visionary man. So anyway, I was over there, and you know, I go in there, and it's a bunch of police and then staff, and I teach mindfulness. I teach how to move, things that move us close to thusness, just being present to the body, to our feelings, to what's in the present moment. When I go and do that, it feels good. I grew up, I'm like a rebel! I'm a recovering addict and alcohol addict. So my interactions with the police in my past have not always been positive. We'll put it that way. So, you know, I come with a lot of conditioning to not have a good feeling about police. But I'm very grateful because I have a lot of training here in this place. So actually, this has been my experience very consistently. When I go in that room and it's time to teach mindfulness, all I see is people. And this is the same thing that has happened when I've had the good fortune to teach meditation in correctional facilities. I sit down in a room, and what they are is people. And I know, because I am human, that we share something, that we suffer, and that we can do something about it. And that's I go, what I have some faith in is that just being present to how you are helps. And it helps in all directions. It helps immediacy, and it helps infinity. And that takes a little bit of faith, which is why you have these crazy texts that say it's natural and wondrous. Because it's kind of hard to believe that this is really going to work. You, how many people sit down in meditation and go, oh, I got something more important to do? Yeah, you get up. Because we don't have faith. It's hard to have faith in the moment. Can you trust the moment? It's hard to trust it. Why? Because the mind is conditioned to think, I need to figure this out and manipulate it. Let's get to work. So, anyway, it's nice. I like being with those people. Feels good. We have a sense of trust between us. There's a couple of them who sort of glare at me. That's okay. It's their job. What if you go to your job and they make you meditate? That's crazy. But it's good. And it felt good, and you know, we all smiled and said thank you. And then I left, and I went out, and I saw a training officer, Sergeant Markham, a good friend of mine. And I said, how's things going? And he had the radio on really loud, and he was like, oh, man. I was like, what? And he's like, well, haven't you heard the news? And I was like, what news? He's like, oh, there was a shooting just a few miles from here, police shooting, and it's really, really bad. So I see, very stressful. But he was busy, so I just said, well, I hope things go okay, and I started to leave. And I got out into the lobby, and there was a woman. There's almost never anyone in the lobby there, you know. Who goes to the police? I don't know. Not me. just an elderly white lady, and she was at the window, and one of the people came to the window, and she said, I got to talk to someone about last night. And the guy said, well, I'm not sure what you're talking about. Reasonable answer. And she just started crying. She started crying. She leaned over the counter and just started weeping. I don't feel like I can trust the police anymore. And this guy behind the window is just like, I'm not sure. You know, he has no idea what to do with that. What do you do with that? And, you know, so my practice is to be intimate with how things are. I thought, oh, I want to get out of here. Oh, look at me, want to run from the pain. Like, oh, I'm going to go over there. Can I do something to help? Ah, look at me, want to try and fix things. And I just stop. And my practice is to know, oh, I'm doing that because it hurts. So now the practice is intimacy with my own suffering. And then, what? I'm like, I take a minute to actually think. Well, do I have a role here? I don't have. This is theirs to figure out. It's not my place. So I wish them well, and I left. And I hope. I don't know what happened. But this confused person, his job, and this woman, and all this pain. It's just hard. So I don't have a solution, but I have a practice. And you know, so then a number of us have been going down to, by the governor's mansion. There's been an ongoing sort of protest and vigil for Philando Castile, who was shot, in case you don't know, by a Falcon, well, actually a St. Anthony police officer in Falcon Heights, to death. He was killed on Wednesday night. And so a bunch of us have gone down there to practice meditation and do other things. I know Ted and Susan and I were sitting over there together. I know Jeffrey has been over there quite a bit. I saw Jason Quick. Actually, I didn't know I saw Jason Quick because I was meditating and he just sat and meditated with me for a while. I was just sitting. So I just go over there and sit. I don't know. I actually do not know. But I want to do something. And I do have some faith in just moving close to thusness. And so sitting there, I just listened to people. And you know, the first night I went there, these things, sometimes people are kind of happy. They're like, we're together. We're in pain, but we're together. And so, you know, people were chanting and they were dancing and singing. Some of the chants were angry, but some were very joyful. And people were hugging each other and talking, oh, it's good to see you. And I just listen. You know, took it in. felt it, noticed, oh, you know, I thought, oh, this is okay. And then there were a couple of people in the back. There was a lot of chanting, and there were a couple of people in the back who kept trying to get this chant going. Someone's going to have to edit this out. They wanted to get everyone to start chanting, fuck the police. And so they would just yell this. Oh, anytime the chant would start to die down, these guys in the back would start yelling that at the top of their lungs. They couldn't get everyone to join in. And I was sitting there, oh, God, that's not going to help. Oh, no. Oh. And then I was like, oh, my job here is just to listen. What's going on? Oh, pain. Pain. That's why they're yelling, and that's what I'm feeling. So I have to move that into consciousness to get close to thusness, to move closer to how things are. So, yeah, and then when I got up, of course, the camera crews had gone over to those guys. Oh, well. You know, violence gets a lot of attention. It's a lot of attention, you really notice. Actually, how much love is being enacted in the world right now? Whoa! How many people right now are gazing at a baby just like, wow! And the only thing there is love. Millions? Wow! That's contained in this moment. This one. So, there's all kinds of love. This violence gets attention, but that group of people that was chanting, they didn't let that more violent chant grab them. It carried their own energy. And that's my practice. And you know, I don't know about you guys, but I used to spend a lot of time in bars. I'm not necessarily recommending this. Not a good place for zazen. But you know, people get in fights. And I don't know if this was the best thing to do, but I saw so many people try and break up fights, and then the fight just got one person bigger. I don't know if you've ever seen this. It's very common. And so whenever conflict started to break out in bars, my practice became to just not pay attention. And actually, I think that was helpful. I added nothing. There's occasion, like if people I know are, you know, you can say things that are helpful or bring people together, but yeah, a lot of times it's just don't go out and jump into it. You don't have to jump into it. You can let it be there. I don't have to ignore it. You just let it exist. So there's a lot of amazing and wonderful things happening in the world. There's a lot of painful things happening in the world. I will say, I don't know how Zen this is, but I do think we have an opportunity to change the way race happens in our country. And I think we should act. I do. But for me, I think this action has to come from a continued attention to my own moment. This thusness, bringing elements into awareness that are hidden. Defensiveness, because I'm white. Defensiveness because I'm white. Or violence because I think someone else is super wrong or I want to make someone the enemy. Martin Luther King Jr. was good at saying things that were beautiful. One that I like is, I've chosen to stick with love because hatred is too great a burden to bear. I want to put it down. I experience hatred. I don't want to carry it. It's painful. I don't think it helps people. I've decided to stick with love because hatred is too great a burden to bear. And another one, which I really like. The amazing thing about nonviolence is that no one loses. This is a practice where we can make it so no one loses. We transform the way our lives function from the root by enacting nonviolence in the posture of Zazen. Ahimsa, this is an ancient Indian term. Ahimsa, nonviolence. We enact it in meditation by having a nonviolent relationship with the moment, and that cultivates our capacity to meeting moments with nonviolence, and people see it. And I'll tell you what, I do not really know whether going over and sitting in meditation where there's a protest is helpful. I don't ultimately know, but I have enough faith to do it, and I don't know if going and hanging out with the police and teaching them to do it is good, is helpful, but I have enough faith to do it. But what I know is people say, thanks. Thank you. Thank you. So you may think, there's too much in the world to do. I can't come over and sit Zazen at MCMC. This place is here as a beacon and a symbol of the possibility of peace. People feel it. We uphold it. The peace of just returning to this thusness. Immediate, infinite, without violence, without ideas. Thank you. So, I forgot to mention that we're going to have, we just, Ted and Susan came up with a really nice idea of doing what's called a council process at 11:30 today. Is it going to go for an hour or what?
An hour.
So 11:30, 12:30. Council process is kind of like it's like group Zazen with words. Mm-hmm. So you sit in a circle and you cultivate awareness by deeply listening to people and speaking from the heart. And I believe there'll be some prompts to be talking about something related to these issues of, what do you want to call it, social justice. So you're very much invited to stay for that because this opens up a lot of room for conversation and processing. But anyway, we do have a few minutes to talk now, so if you would like to say something or ask a question, please do.
I want to beg your indulgence to share something that I think your words today have given new meaning to me about. In my work training, I had a mentor who talked a lot about what he said was the paradoxical theory of change. Mm. And his tenet was that our desire is to get excited about some future state and then try to exercise control to push it in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that the real way to affect change in the most powerful way is to be clear about the what is in the moment. That if you don't know where you stand in the moment, you have no idea the pathway for your next step. And there's such wisdom in that. And it was ringing in my mind as you were speaking about this idea how quickly we leap to the blame and why are people like that and all those shoulds that get in there. And I think it speaks to the power of this just quieting oneself down and saying, can I fully embrace just where we stand, the beautiful parts as well as the ugly ones?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's great. It's subtle. It's a paradox. Maybe the simplest way to put it is we try and act without trying to. We focus on the action, the quality of our action, rather than the outcomes. What is the quality of my action? Is it compassionate? Is it energetic? These are all the terms that Buddhism said we should have. Compassion, energy, loving kindness, presence, mindfulness, concentration. If we do that, we do things that I think they'll be helpful, I hope. But when I'm focusing on outcomes, it's so frustrating and I get all wrapped up. So that's great.
Mm-hmm. When I visited the first night down at the residence, you could feel confusion.
Yeah.
You could feel fear and confusion and anger. But what I noticed is that people, by just being a presence, by being a presence of compassion and kindness, that people gravitated to that. They needed that. And our presence down at these types of things, or our presence with our family, or our presence just being available, are the things that will help balance all of that confusion and all of that fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think so.
Then on Thursday, you shared a really great story. I thought maybe you could share again, talking about how you did it to get out of all this pain. You mentioned your friend who was working in a call bank. I thought it was a really helpful story.
All right. I'll do it. Thank you, Mark. So, yeah, I was here talking to the 12-step group on Thursday, which was wonderful. What a great group. I love that group. Anyway, so, so I had a friend who was really didn't want George Bush to be reelected, and she really wanted John Kerry to be elected to President of the United States. And she got really into it. She took a leave of absence from work for like 2 weeks and went, like, flew to Florida, stayed in a motel, and worked a phone bank. I mean, she was like, I'm giving everything to this. Well, you may be aware that John Kerry did not become president of the United States. And she was just like, I'm done doing politics. It doesn't work. Mm. Wow. I mean, I get it. It's frustrating. I mean, you know, we're not going to be done with racism anytime soon. We're not. So that's why if we focus on the quality of how we are with compassion, the quality of our action, you can keep acting. You know, if you're focused on outcomes, it's so frustrating to deal with big problems. You go, oh, let me go back to worrying about little problems like whether I can get my favorite website to load. No, man, don't do it. We have amazing capacity. And the thing is, it's because it's natural and wondrous and joyous to live this way. You look at, there's a lot of people around here who are, they do all kinds of, they work a lot, but they're not burdened with their duties because their work arises out of an engagement with the world that's natural and momentary. I mean, to some degree, obviously, we all get all messed up and everything, but, it's great. You know, I went over there yesterday, and it was like people were really upset yesterday. It was not, there was none of this joyful. It was just people like, you know, ah. And I was just listening, and I was like, oh, you know, I was just sitting there crying. I'm like, are you supposed to sit with your robes on in public and weep? I don't know, but I'm doing it. But then I got up, and I went to be with my family. We had a great time because I was the thusness I was with. It was fun. Not bound, free. Free to move.
Why did you sit and listen and not go talk to the people who were trying to chant publicly?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. One, they were people of color, and I really think, I mean, at the most root, I don't think it's my job to go to a protest like that and tell any people of color pretty much anything. So that is number one. Two, in the practice of Zazen, the level of stuff that's painful or problematic that has to be happening while I'm sitting is pretty high for me to get up. I mean, you know, I'll get up and help people, but I mean, I have sat here in the Zendo while the fire alarm went off. Because I knew the Tenzo will probably fix it. I'll give it about 2 minutes, and then maybe I'll get up. But, so, you know, we had a squirrel walk in here one day and no one moved except for the Doan. Doan got up. So, but I don't want to make light of this because, yeah, it's, the question is when do we act? I mean, you're like, why? I don't know. I just tried to check in. Like I say, that principal reason is that one. Really affirming the truth of the people of color who are finding places to be heard. That's my main job, number one. I just don't think I would have been able to be very helpful. But like, who are you? You know? Yeah.
Oh,
please do.
Okay. It's actually interesting that you brought that up, because when I was listening to a story about the police station and the older woman that was crying, what popped in my head, and please, I'd love to hear your response or thoughts on my thinking, but I just thought of intentionality, like what's your intention if you were to go over and approach that woman? So, again, if it's just from the ego, mm-hmm. if this makes me uncomfortable, I need to fix it, maybe that's not the best for you to go over. But if it's the intention of, like, universality and, like, this is another being that's hurt, can I help them or can I be there for them? And so approaching them from that standpoint, mm-hmm. just being there and being receptive to whatever she wants, if it's, no, leave me alone, and then walking away versus, oh my gosh, you know, that person embracing you or wanting you to stand next to them. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I think that's exactly right. And within that, there was a little discernment about roles. So I was like, this really is, these police people, they've got something to do here. I'm going to let him meet her, however he can do it. But I think you're exactly right. It's about the attention. Uh-huh.
I really like that you shared Martin Luther King's quotes. They're very inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting that violence is a component of this lived experience, and yet it is amplified and it can be contagious. And another one, like my favorite quotes that he had introduced, was that, how's it go? It's like, darkness cannot rid darkness, only light can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Hatred cannot get rid of hatred, only love can do that.
Hmm. Yeah. Yes. I think that's true. And it's light. So this talk is a little heavy, but it's light. We're here. We have a capacity, every one of us, to do something amazing. Don't forget it. It doesn't have to be heavy. If it's painful, then that's real. Be close to our pain. But remember that we can do something. So I think you want to say something?
Yeah, but
okay.
Kind of.
I think we should be out of time, because otherwise I'd get in trouble. Sorry. Thank you. Thank you all very much. And I wish everyone well.